everyone, and welcome to episode 136. This is yet another interview episode. Today I'm interviewing Douglas Spain, who plays the character of Antonio Tony Garcia. So sit back and enjoy and listen to another interview episode with one of the actors. Okay, so I'm here with Douglas Spain, who plays Garcia in Band of Brothers. And I'm very, very happy to discuss with you your experiences as being one of the Band of Brothers. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Fun to be here.
Yeah, I'm also glad that I'm glad we found a time that we could talk. That works really well for me too.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your patience. I appreciate it.
No problem. We're all busy, So you take that into consideration. You're especially as an actor, where you're jumping from project to project, probably. So you have very little downtime in between, and when you do have downtime, you want to do important things. And not that I'm saying what we're doing now is not important, but it's probably not necessarily high on everyone's priority list all the time. So thank you. I do
You're
appreciate
welcome.
That.
Likewise.
All right. So why don't you start by telling me your history with Band of Brothers? How did you get cast? Do you remember the casting process?
I do remember the casting process. I was auditioning for another series that Tom Hanks was producing called West Point, and Meg Lieberman was casting that as well. And I was going to producers. I was doing really well on the auditions for that series. And when I had gone into Meg Lieberman's office for the initial audition for West Point, she had these sort of, life-size posters of war, predominantly Second World War. She had like them all in her office, just, about my height, big posters all over. And I asked her, oh, what is this for? And she said, oh, I'm doing a World War II project. And I said, oh, well, I'd love to read for it if there's any role. And she kind of downplayed it. She's like, oh, it's this little indie project that we're shooting in London, and your agent's not going to want you to audition for it because, you have to fly yourself out there and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't care. If it's a good part or if it's a good project, I'd love to come in and read for it. So I did. She did bring me in for it, and it was just the two of us, and she helped me a lot. It's just one audition. Mind you that I was still auditioning for West Point at the same time. So when I went in, I did my research on the time period and all that stuff for the audition, and we went in, she guided me, I did two takes, and that was it. Then I didn't hear anything until later on my manager called and said, hey, you booked that Tom Hanks project, which I thought was West Point. Then he was like, no, you booked Band of Brothers. And I was like, Band of Brothers? What is that? And then he proceeded to tell me it's, World War II, Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks. And I was like, Steven Spielberg? What? I was so confused, but I was excited, obviously. But I did not know the details of the project until I had booked it. And that was sort of how I got cast. One audition, two takes. And I guess Tony Toe was the producer who selected me, if I recall correctly, for the role. So I'm very grateful.
Oh, wow. Do you remember what, what lines you had to read? I mean, not specifically, but what character were you reading? Were you reading for Garcia, or you were just reading in general?
No, I think they were dummy sides. I believe so. Because it's not anything that I recall from the series, and it was 26 years ago, so I won't
Oh, come on.
remember
You can't remember
exactly.
something that happened. You can't remember a line you said 26 years ago. Come on.
Because as actors, like the minute we leave the room, we just toss the sides into the trash and or the recycling bin, and we're like on to the next. We don't kind of linger. It's very difficult for us as actors to hold on to an audition, because it's like always pending. We don't know, so a lot of times we'll just like move on, and if it comes back around, great. If it doesn't, then we're on to the next. So usually we tend to not remember many auditions. At least I don't.
Okay.
Meaning sp
Well, you remember
specific
that you
details.
auditioned for West Point, which never came to be, right?
No,
Or
I
did it?
don't
I
think
don't
it
think
got
so.
picked up. I don't think it got picked up. But
Yeah.
yeah, I did go to producers, and I wouldn't be able to remember you the sides from that series either. But it was military, and I think I went to producers a couple times because they started doing these sort of chemistry reads with other actors on that series. But that's what I thought
Oh,
initially
wow.
that I had booked, because when he said Tom Hanks, I thought, oh, cool, that series. And then when he said Spielberg, I was like, wait, what is this show? And so I learned after that. So, thank you to Meg Lieberman. I think she was just looking for actors who were interested in acting and not interested in
Right.
the name factor, which is why she played it down, because she never ever told me. And then when we were at the Golden Globes, I believe I was at the table with her, and I said, Meg, since this is what you consider low budget, please bring me in for all your big budget stuff.
That definitely makes sense. No question about that. So you were living in LA at the time?
Yes.
Or New
Yeah.
York?
That's
Where
my home.
from? You were in
No,
LA.
Los Angeles is my home, yes. So I was there,
Oh,
and
okay.
her office was like 2 blocks from my house at the time. She had an office on Wilshire in Hancock Park, and I'm like 2 blocks from there. So it was all very easy,
Oh,
and
wow.
she's a sweetheart. She's always just and she's a great casting director, as you can see from the show and many of her other projects. She knows talent, and she's helpful. She's a helpful casting director.
Did she bring you in for other projects in the future
Oh
after?
yeah, I've been auditioning for Meg for a long time.
Oh, wow.
So I knew her. Like I was an actor that she would bring in. Like I said, she was, having me audition for West Point, and there were other projects that I had auditioned for her. I don't know if I think Band of Brothers might be the only one I booked. I cannot
Okay.
recall, but I
Well, that's
believe
what you're
it.
remembered for, so that's a
Yeah,
good thing.
So it was nice, and I think a few years ago we were at a reunion, and Meg brought in some audition tapes and stuff to see all the other actors, which was really cool. And like I said, she's just wonderful, and I'm so grateful to her and Tony Tove for selecting me to portray
Right.
Tony Garcia, which is one of the most memorable experiences of my life. So.
I can't even imagine. But I mean, I can, but can't,
Yeah, for sure.
I can't put myself in your shoes, but I can imagine that how impactful it's been to you, and I mean everyone else that I've talked to that's been part of the production. I mean, again, as you mentioned, it's been 20, 25, 26 years. And everyone still has very, very fond memories of it, and they still have connections
Yeah.
to things going on. Okay, so you got the part, and how much time did they give you before you needed to fly off to
Oh,
England?
I think it was. I'll say a month, and so
Well, that's good. I spoke to Renee, and Renee said like he had to leave, I think, the next day or something like that. So that's still
yeah,
pretty good.
I think I had a month or something. It was either somewhere like April, May, and then it's exactly 26 years. It was June 2000 that I landed in London, and prior to that, I started training because I knew it was portraying, a soldier in the Second World War. So I started getting like doing my own kind of boot camp. I didn't really No, because I mean, I just went and started working out, and there are these stairs in Santa Monica that are really fun to like work out on, you know, because you're at the beach and you can really just go up and down the stairs. So I was working out one weekend, and after I finished my weekend, there's the Third Street Promenade, and I bumped into Tom Hanks after my workout. He was there with his wife. They had just finished watching a movie, and I was like, "Hey, Tom." You know, I said, I'm gonna be working on Band of Brothers with you. He's like, I'll see you there. You know, so it's all kismet. It was all really, you know, because I was working out for the show and then I bumped into him. So it was really,
Really
yeah,
cool.
it was cool. It was very cool.
Okay, so you get to England. Well, first of all, what did they tell you about? I mean, you were part of the boot camp, so what did they tell you beforehand about the boot
I
camp?
was not part of the boot camp. They had already been shooting for 3
Oh,
months.
really?
Yeah.
The
Yeah.
replacement,
Replacement.
the replacements were not part
No,
of the boot
no,
camp?
no,
Oh,
not at all.
okay.
Because we came in three.
Because they wanted to feel right. They wanted to feel the distance, I guess,
Correct.
between the. Interesting.
But they were
Okay.
also technically they were already filming, so they couldn't do another boot camp per se, you know, because they were already 3 months into filming the show. So I came in on the end of episode three, and then four and five, and so there was no boot camp. Like I said, the Santa Monica stairs were my boot camp, and then I bumped into Tom. So that's as far.
Oh, wow.
What I had gotten was the packet, which was, you know, the dossier, which had all of Tony Garcia's information, and it had his phone number. And so I called him and, you know, said, "Hey, I'm an actor, Douglas Fain, and I'm portraying you," which was, I've portrayed real life characters before, but never one that I actually got to meet. And so I called him, and he was up in like just south of San Francisco, so I offered to drive up there and meet with him. And so I did. I drove up there and I met him, and the first thing he said to me was, "You're short."
But I'm an actor.
Tony, I said, I'm about the same height as Tom Cruise. So he's funny. It was great. I got to meet him, and we sat in his living room with his wife and his family, kids. And I, you know, being an actor, I was just digging for information. I had no sensibility about how difficult this was for him that time, you know, because you only know through watching films or reading books, but I never really had like a firsthand kind of conversation with a veteran. This was probably the first time that it was an in-depth conversation, one-on-one. And just being an actor, I was just being inquisitive. I was like, "Well, what'd you do?" You know, because I wanted to get as much information from him as I could, prior to going to do the show. And he opened up a lot. He was telling me stories that his family had never heard. And again, because I was prying, I was like, tell me more, and what happened, and all this, and sort of personal things that he probably never shared before, you know, about the sacrifice and the loss of life and all that stuff, which he ended up sharing with me. I think, if anything, it was therapeutic for both of us, especially him, to be able to just let that out, you know. So,
Wow, that's just amazing that you were able to have that experience, and then he was also at the same time, because as we all know, a lot of the veterans, especially even men in Easy Company, had a lot of difficulty talking to their family, until much later in life about everything that happened. So.
and that was something I didn't know. So again, I didn't have that information that how sensitive this type of conversation would be, and that the families didn't know. So I was just being an actor, being inquisitive, trying to take notes and learn as much as I could, with no sensibility about what this meant. But as he was telling me the stories, and I was very intrigued by them, they were definitely heavy, in terms of just the struggle, and you could see it. But you could also, like I said, you could see he just like opened up and spoke. We spent an entire evening, night, talking and laughing and having a great time. And that's the moment where I felt that I had to do right by him.
Understand that. I mean, I spoke a few months ago with Jean Garnier, Garnier's son, and one of the things that he told me was is that he learned so much about his father from his father's conversations with other people. Meaning his father didn't talk about it with the family, but then people, especially after the book came out and after the miniseries, people would come and they'd sit with his father, and he would sit there and he'd be listening and he'd be like, "Wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that." And he'd just learn so much about his father's story from that perspective. So to me, it sounds a similar type of thing. If Tony didn't talk to his family, but they were sitting there listening and being surprised by all the things that he was telling you.
Yes. So they learned a lot about him as well in that moment, and they were, telling me that those were stories they had never heard of. They never knew. So I think it was therapeutic for all of us, it was just a wonderful experience, and if anything, it allowed him to let that go if he was holding on to it, if he just needed to get it out. And I was a vessel for him to be able to, just release it, let it go, whatever.
Right.
You
Did
know, like I
you?
said, I didn't really get it into it. I didn't like pry into how he felt about it. Because it was more about what happened and all that stuff. I did not really go into judging whether he felt that was good or bad. I did avoid that kind of situation. I was just more inquisitive of like knowing more and more any details stuff that I could extract from him that would benefit me as an actor. And I think it did. And so when all of us actors were on the set, a lot of us had that same sentiment, that same experience, and that same respect and goal to honor these men. It was felt throughout, from the top all the way, down to everyone. We were all in it for them.
Did you take notes or did you record it, for yourself for posterity afterwards?
This was 26 years ago, so
I
we didn't
know. I didn't. I
have
wasn't
we
asking
didn't
advance.
we I mean, we had
You didn't have a
email.
phone that you could do that on.
Yeah, we didn't like we took pictures, I think with like the digital cameras. No, I
Right.
didn't like
I
sit
should
there.
take notes. I didn't say
I didn't take notes because I didn't want it to feel like an interview. I just wanted to
digitally.
have a conversation with him. And
Right.
I think if I had sat there with notes and stuff, it would have felt strange. So I just
Right.
kept
No,
it
that's understandable.
conversational. And I think
Right.
that's why he opened up, because we were just sitting in the living room and talking and stuff.
Okay, that makes sense. No, I'm just asking from the perspective, in hindsight, because obviously I understand completely why you wouldn't have sat down and wrote everything down when you're talking to him. But maybe I don't know. Maybe afterwards wrote notes to yourself to help you along with the process later of portraying him. To try to remember certain things that he said for you to say, okay, well, during Market Garden, he told me this. So this is something that I'm going to quote unquote ad lib or whatever.
I didn't have the script. I didn't have the scripts, like any of the scripts. So
No, you.
I didn't know anything with regards to the actual story. So I couldn't, go to the script and be specific
Right,
in
obviously,
terms.
obviously, obviously.
So that's why I wasn't able to, like, ask him specific questions about Market Garden or anything like that, because we didn't have the scripts. I think I got the script for episode 3, or no, we started shooting episode 5 was the first 2 days that I filmed, which was the episode that Tom directed, Tom Hanks. And I think I got it when I landed. And all I had was the book, which is what I read going there. And so I didn't go into the specifics, because I think it all just happens fast. They sent me the dossier of him, and then I called him, and then I went to meet him, and then I left. And that's when I was reading in the book. But I did talk to him again. We didn't have iMessage or Zoom, so it was all like phone, long distance phone calls, that I would make from London to San Francisco to be able to call him. And so we would talk for a little bit about specific things, and just wanted to make sure that I was on track with what was happening and all that stuff. So those were the times, but those were conversations we had over the phone. Again, our initial meeting was just him and I getting to know one another, and then me just prying about, like, and again, the stories that he told me were not really related to much of the book, because it was stuff that he never spoke of.
Okay, that's understandable. And he was helpful when you were calling him and asking him about
Oh yeah,
specific
for sure.
scenes and stuff like that. And he said, "Oh, well, I was on that part. I was over there instead of this." And I don't know,
Yeah, there was a lot of input from them in regards, and I think that's why the series is pretty accurate. I think that's what why a lot of the men felt like the series honored them well. Because they did have a lot of input from just not us, but production. Production was also very involved in with a lot of the vets that were still around. So yeah, he was helpful. He was great. I mean, I knew him for 5 years before he passed away. So it was a very beneficial aspect of my life to have known Tony.
I can imagine. So, okay, you're in England and you're starting to shoot some of the scenes, and you're shooting scenes with guys that went through the boot camp. Now, from what I understand from conversations with people who were at the boot camp, the whole idea was is they were training them, how to how to clean their weapons, how to shoot, stances, all these different things. But you said they didn't train you in any of those things. I know on the one hand they want to make you look as if you're newbies. But on the other hand, you still have to know what you need to do.
Yes, we did. Oh, so I landed, and I think it's like a landed on a Wednesday, and I was working Thursday, Friday, and that Thursday we had like a really quick sort of boot camp. It was like just going through our M1 and all the sort of tactics and stuff. There were a lot of the guys there who were giving us a quick run through, just because again they were it was already a moving train, so I had to jump in and just catch up. And I think that was intentional, because there was that sort of difference, just between them, the original men, and then us, who didn't have the experience and that they had in boot camp, and knowing all the procedures and stuff that they had to go through. So we were kind of in the dark, and it worked. Them having that knowledge over us worked. And I think it shows.
I recall that in I think episode 4, there's a right after you jump on Market Garden, so Bull comes over to you and starts showing you different things and stuff like that. And my question is was that completely in the script, or was that because Michael Cudlitz had certain information and was using it to help you, because they wanted to also show that type of connection between the guys who did the boot camp or the original guys from Tekoa with the replacements.
Well, this was prior to our jump in Market Garden. This is where prepping for that jump in episode 4. And yes, I believe that was in the script because, again, it was that kind of experience level where Bo was part of that first batch of men who jumped on D-Day, and then they were sort of we were a little more fumbling, and that was all natural because we hadn't gone through the training. So,
Right,
and
you
the
really were
training that
fumbling.
we did, yeah, because
You didn't
we
have to
didn't
act.
really, we didn't have to act. Now, in fairness, a lot of them knew they were well trained. All the men trained in Tekoa were well trained, including Tony Garcia. So it wasn't like they weren't, naive to any of it. But we had to show that there was a gap between those men and us.
Right.
So I believe those are, that's one of those scenes where they sort of just played on that aspect.
Right. I mean, what was the atmosphere like at the beginning on set between the replacements and the guys who went through the boot camp?
My initial introduction to these guys was Jimmy Matteo, who plays Percante. I had I'm from California, so I had showed up in because in Europe, Mercedes-Benz is sort of the workhorse for a lot of people. It's mostly used for taxis and delivery services, all that stuff. So the drivers there had Mercedes-Benz. So I'm pulling up in a Mercedes-Benz to the tent. And I get out and I'm wearing flip-flops and shorts and probably like a Hawaiian shirt and stuff. And I come out of the car and Jimmy is the first one to see me. And he just like looks at me and then he runs inside. And he's like, I guess from his perspective, he had gone in and told the guys, "Hey, there's a new guy here. We got to get him." Especially because I was wearing flip flops and shorts, so he was they were totally going to get me for just coming in as this like, and it started from there. They really did. They were in character, all of them, and sort of created a distance. Again, we know that a lot of it had to do because there were so many loss of lives and bonds that had been broken. So they didn't want to go through that again. I can relate to that. It's sad to lose someone and then to start over. It's knowing that you're still in the war. And from Tony's perspective, he admired them. He looked up to them. So there wasn't this like high school kind of mentality of like those are the cool kids, and it was more of out of respect. So there was no like they really wanted to fit in because they respected these men. At least from Tony's point of view, that's what I got from him. He respected them.
Makes sense. And at what point did they start reacting to you guys differently? Because again, you were in 7 episodes with them, and at a certain point, you're no longer considered the newbie. You're then one of the men. But I think by the time you guys got the Bastone, they were acting towards the replacements, in a very different way, because they've gone through 3 4 months of battle with them.
Well, by that time we were no longer replacements. There were other replacements
Exactly.
because
Right.
so and so it we just ended up being a part of the company, I guess
Right.
within a month or two, and just also proving yourself as an actor and proving that you are also committed to the work and to these men. As I said, it was sort of a sentiment that we all had, and we felt it immediately. And it wasn't like, Oh, this is some actor attitude kind of situation. This is for real. This is so that we can earn our points, I guess, in terms of, and we wanted to. We wanted to be as good as them and do good work. Didn't want to stand off as someone who didn't know what they were doing. So we were all committed to bringing our best foot forward.
That makes sense. So, are there any stories, anecdotes, things that stick out in your mind, over the? I assume you were there for about 7 months filming with them. If
Yeah, about six, I
you were
think.
there
Yeah,
for seven.
it's like
Oh,
n nine
sorry,
month,
6 months.
a n 9 month project, and I came in a month at the end of three,
Right.
and I mean, it was 6 months of like exciting, wonderful stuff, and we were in London. I was in my 20s, so there was a lot of that. And long hours, everybody, because we were filming two episodes simultaneously. So you would run from one set to another set and be filming another episode. Like four and five, we were doing simultaneously. So we would cross over.
Oh, wow.
They were busy. They were, it was a moving train. It was going fast, and we were just doing our work. I mean, outside of that, I think it's not necessary to talk about on this podcast, but we, because we were
Okay,
young
no,
guys in
that's
London
fine.
having a great time.
I wasn't trying to out anyone, for acting like a 20-year-old, then.
in London, a lot of great, yeah, it was a fun time. It was a great experience. And as far as anything from the show, like we had done episode five, and there was the big explosion that they had after, the big shootout at the crossroads. Then there was the big explosion, so we got to see that. And it was cool. It was like, again, we didn't have time to think about it. I think one interesting moment is like, when we started filming episode five, Tom Hanks invited us all out to the pub, and we sort of just to get to know each other and talk and have a good time. And I saw Jimmy
Did he
Kimmel
remember
there.
you? Did he remember you?
Tom, yes, from Santa Monica. Yeah. Yeah.
No, like when
Tom
you were sitting in
has.
the pub, you think, "Hey, Doug, I saw you running on Santa Monica."
Oh no, I had already been filming. So he saw me, like I said, when I first got there, my first 2 days were in Tom's episode five. I started working with him immediately, and from there, yeah, he remembered. His memory is great. So, I said, I'm here. But again, we were all just trying to get into character and try and stay on point. For me, a lot of it was, on a side note, sort of taking myself out of character, just thinking about Tony in those ditches, in those trenches, thinking about him and how he was there and like how that must have been for him. And so a couple years ago, I went to Toccoa, Georgia to train to, parachute out of a C-47, and just the way he and all the men were trained, and I wanted that experience. I wish I had had it prior to filming, just to know, because I think that's a very important aspect, because they are airborne, and so I never had that. I've never jumped out of a plane, so I didn't have that perspective. And I went to Toccoa, and when I was walking through the camp, I was thinking, well, I wonder what Tony was thinking like 82 years ago when he was here. And one of the instructors was, they didn't have time to think. It's weird because it finally hit me years later, 20, 4 years later, of something that I had been thinking when I was filming Band of Brothers, because those are thoughts that I would have about Tony. Is like, what did he think about? Was he going home? You know, just to have this sort of inner thought in my mind as to what it would really be like to not know where you're going or if you're ever going home. So I would think a lot about that when I was in the trenches and filming. And but recently, knowing I think that a lot of men didn't really have time to think about stuff like that.
Right.
You know, because they were always in motion, always moving,
Yes.
and I guess they would have a few moments here and there, but it was probably heavy to think about home because you didn't know if you were going home. So there was a lot of that for me, always just thinking about him and what his experience was and what he was going through. And when I would get a chance to talk to him on the phone, I would sort of ask these questions, and you know, he. Yeah, I don't think he thought much during that time. I don't think most of the men thought. You didn't really have time to sit there and ponder life
Right.
in the way that I was during that time.
Right, obviously. And do you
Yeah,
remember during the
because
course of...
I
No, go ahead. Go
pardon.
ahead. No, go
Oh,
ahead.
because I mean, I was going home at the end of the day, you know. So I had that sort of realism that I was going home, but for him, he was not going home or didn't know if he was going home.
And you
And so
know, you didn't
that
know if
always
and when
sat
you
on me.
were going.
Correct. And that's something I thought about a lot while I was there, because I was like, I just felt fortunate that I would be able to go home. And this, you know, it's fun to be here and playing this role, because, you know, I'm an actor and you're definitely like, you know, making a television show. You're not really there. So even though you want to be as an actor, you want to get into character and you want to be there, but the reality is I get to go home. So I would just, like I said, think about what it was like for him to not know that.
Right. Okay, makes sense. So during the course of filming these 7 episodes, were there times that you can recall right now that based on your conversations with Tony, you said to the director or whatever, "I want to try this, I want to try that," because this is what Tony said they did or whatever, or you basically just went with the flow of the script?
Well, there was one incident in episode 8. Now, it was no fault of anyone's, but it was just a thing that happened. Because, you know, it was across the river. I was part of or Tony was part of that mission. And at the last moment, they chose me to be the one to fall into the water. Again, this is not something where I had instant way to communicate to Tony, also the hour difference and all that stuff. I knew he was part of that mission, but I did not know the specifics about those who fell into the water. And so they had selected me to fall into the water, and they put me in a suit because this is in November. Like, yeah, November, and it was freezing cold, and that water was cold, so I had to wear a wetsuit underneath. And when I did talk to Tony, he was very upset because he was on the mission, but he did not fall into the water, and so he did not like that. And I apologized to him profusely because I, you know, like I said, it was a moving train, and they just like I couldn't say yes or no, because I did not have that information when I was selected. And I didn't know if those specifics were important or not. You know, a lot of times you just trust the filmmakers and the production that they'll do. But again, it's you know, so that was the only thing that he was not happy with. But it was after the fact, you know, because I had mentioned that, and he was like, "I
Right,
did
you couldn't
not
have
fall
changed
in the water."
that.
There was nothing, yeah, there was nothing could be done, but I did feel bad that I did not have that information. And I know that if I had that information and I had given it to them, or if anyone had that information, that Tony would not, I would not have been chosen. Like and if I had said, "No, I can't," be the one to fall into the water, they would have honored that. They would have said, okay, they would have chosen someone else. I know that for a fact. Again, this was, you know, it happened, and then I spoke to Tony, and that's the only thing that upset him.
Right.
But when he saw the series, he was, you know, he's much more understandable about the situation and all that. And, you know, I apologized profusely. I was like, it was not intentional, and had I known, we wouldn't have done it. We, the
Right.
entire production and filmmakers, we wouldn't have done it. So that was the only mistake, I guess, on my part for not knowing those specific details about that mission at the time. So it happens.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
As we all know, there are things that both the book and the main series got wrong about what really
Yeah.
happened with a whole bunch of different things, and you deal with it. That's what it is. You know, you can't change it at this point. It's human
Yeah,
error. It happens.
there's a lot human error. There's a lot of situations. I know a lot of different people, but again, like you said, the book and the series can't be the actual event. You know, it's a reenactment per se, and so they can't do everything, you know. But the series did a great job at, you know, being as accurate as it could for
For
being,
sure, for
you
sure. I
know, a
mean, I'm
series.
just looking at it from the perspective that the book came out 50 years after the men all came home, you know, so even during the interviews, their memories are not going to be crystal clear, you know. So they could get things wrong. They could, you know, from what I understand, what Ambrose did was is, you know, he would try and corroborate each story
Corroborate.
from another person. And, you know, sometimes they just got things wrong and there's nothing you can do about it. You know.
And they would also talk about the man, either to their left or to their right, and rarely talked about their own experience. So I think a lot was learned from an outside perspective, not the actual individual, in that situation, many situations. But for Tony, I think, like I said, our first meeting, he was sharing personal stories that about his own experience, which I think they rarely ever do. Or even for the book, I'm guessing, I can't say for sure.
That makes sense. Okay, so you've finished filming, and then I assume you were invited for the premiere that they did in Normandy.
Yes, again, you know, you work on a show, you move on to the next project and the next project, and you're not really like focused on the post-production of anything until we went and to Paris, Normandy, to screen the first two episodes, which was great. Obviously, you know, the show is great, but being there with all the men and their families was just surreal
Right. Was Tony
on
there?
Normandy Beach. Yes, Tony and his family. And so being there was just really emotional, and just like that was the show, being there with them. That was like a once in a lifetime experience. It was wonderful. Like, we were there with these men, a lot of them who were on that beach on D-Day and who had lost. It was just a very emotional experience. And then we were watching the series. I don't even remember the series, I think, because we were all just in awe of the presence of these men. We were just having such a great time. We were just enjoying being there with them. It was a once in a lifetime experience that I was blessed to be a part of. And then, yeah, we were all in the tent. We watched the first two episodes, and it was cool and everything. But I think we were, well, me, I was more interested in what Tony thought than in the show. Even though I hadn't seen it before, I was, you know.
Right, because you also weren't in those two episodes, so
No, it
you know,
wasn't
for you it
in
was
those two
brand new.
episodes. But the Toccoa experience and all that stuff, Tony was there and all that. So it was, I just remember being so grateful to be there with Tony and his family and all the other, you know, vets who were there with us. It was cool. It was a really cool experience. I think we also had a premiere at the Hollywood Bowl, and I can't remember if it was before or after Paris. I think it was after. And that one, I
Is that the
think.
one where Michael came in, did the orchestra?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So
Yeah.
I've heard about it, and I believe, if I remember correctly, that came out of that they did after Normandy, if I remember.
Yeah.
But you were there, I
I
wasn't.
think I think it was after. It was definitely after. And I think that's where I kind of it was more of a premiere. The one at the Hollywood Bowl. That was
Okay.
more of a premiere, because we were, you know, there in Hollywood and we were watching the show. So I think that's really where I've like really watched it. The thing in Normandy was a once in a lifetime experience, as I said. So I was just in that moment. And not really paying attention to the screen, I think, as much as I wasn't in Hollywood. Yeah, in Hollywood, it was like, yay, let's watch the, you know, even though we had, most of us had seen it. But it was a different experience. That felt more Hollywood, and the thing in Normandy felt much more of a honoring ceremony for these men. That it felt more like that. I think even now, like any time when you do go to Normandy, it felt more like that, more of a memorial or a D-Day celebration experience, I guess. Not really celebration, but
No,
it's
I understand that. I understand the sentiment.
yeah.
A way to commemorate,
Yeah,
not necessarily
that's
celebrate. Yeah,
commemorate.
exactly.
Yeah, that's what it felt more like. A commemorative experience, you know, for them than an actual premiere, even though there was, you know, everybody was there and there was red carpet and all that stuff. But again, there, this is probably will show the difference between Normandy. That red carpet in Normandy was for them, wasn't for us.
Right.
And we were all okay with that. This was their premiere, their, you know, this was for them. And the one in Hollywood was for us. You know, the
Okay.
actors. So that's the difference between the two
It's a
premieres.
great way to differentiate it. It makes a lot of sense that that's the way it is. I mean,
Yeah.
I've told by numerous people who are at the Paris thing that they don't remember very much because there was a lot of alcohol involved. That's what I was heard. That's
There
what I've heard. Yeah.
was a there was a but I remember it. I remember it even
Right.
with all the alcohol that was involved. I remember that experience because, like I said, it was a I remember it with vivid detail, all of it. So speaking of alcohol, we had, you know, we're in Paris, we're in our 20s, and we had been out all night because Paris is a, you know, late night. And we, I think, we were coming in at 5 in the morning. It was the last night before the last day. And we were just coming from the bars or the nightlife back to the hotel, and all the men were leaving. They were in their yellow jackets, the veterans. They were in their yellow jackets, boarding the buses to go home. And it was like I don't know, it was sad. I got really emotional and sad and cried because it was like this goodbye. And I think Tony was probably embarrassed for me because I was like sobbing and stuff. I was just, you know, because I was watching him board the bus and
Right.
I was like it was goodbye, you know. It just felt that way because we were having such a great week. It was such a phenomenal week. And then I'm coming in like a little tipsy, and he's boarding the bus, and I get on the bus, and I'm like, ah, you know, just an emotional mess. And I always get that way when I think or talk about Tony. It just he's affects me so deeply, and yeah, it was wonderful and sad. It was like a melancholy moment for me. When I went on the bus and I just tried to stay on the bus as long as I could, just sobbing, you know. Then got off the bus and the buses were leaving, just standing there outside the hotel sobbing, waving goodbye. It was just, you know, of course the alcohol made it worse, but yeah, it was a really emotive. I was just so grateful. I was so grateful. It was one of those things where you're like, this experience is coming to an end, and it's just been phenomenal. It's been just, so, and Tony's probably like, you know, but we had a great time. We had
Tony, once
a
again, is
great,
thinking to
great
himself, he's too short.
time. He's too short and too emotional, you
And
know,
doesn't matter who hold his liquor.
to portray me. And he had not seen me as him. Keep that in mind.
That's right. Good point.
He's only seen, so he had not even seen. So I wonder if he's like, oh no, is he gonna be like this short, sobbing portrayal of me? But when he did finally see the episodes with me as portraying him, he was very proud. And then I was very happy.
Oh,
Very
wow.
happy that
Yeah.
he was, you know, he yeah, that I, you know, I felt we did these men good. This is the least we could do. And I felt that with Tony. I felt he was happy with me, the short guy, being chosen to portray him.
That's right. And so, a few months later, they started showing the show. How did you go about watching the show? Did you watch it with family? Did you go to watch it with Tony?
We the actors all had a weekend at their house dedicated. Like every actor was, you know, saying, "Hey, we're gonna watch it at our house." I can't remember. I don't know if was Ron Livingston who did the first one or Ian Bailey. I can't remember who specifically. I think it was Ian Bailey, who played Webster. I believe he had the first 2 hour episode that first Sunday. And then obviously 2 days later, 9/11
9/11.
happened. So there was a delay on the series being aired. Until I think a couple months later is when they started to you know, airing them.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact dates. Well, according to IMDb, on the 16th they had episode 3, and the 23rd they had episode 4, and then the 30th it according to IMDb, it looks like they keep doing it one a week after that.
Yeah,
All the way through November.
I believe they held on. I don't, I think it might have been a
It could
couple
be.
weeks or something.
Could be.
Because of 9/11, they
Right,
felt
obviously.
that it might not be the appropriate. And then eventually they felt that no, it was appropriate, and so they started to air them. I think it was 2 weeks. I can't remember the timeline to
Right.
be
All right.
exact.
So,
I
I mean,
can't remember.
when all the cast members got together to sit and watch it, whether, if you're at Ian Bailey's house or whatever, I mean, were you guys watching the show, or were you guys, catching
No,
up?
yeah,
Like,
we yeah, no, yeah,
and
it was like, you know, get there an hour before it airs and then we'd watch it and then, you know, celebrate afterwards.
okay.
So, that happened at you know, at a lot of different houses. So, yeah, we did. And then every year after that, we would have a reunion, all the actors, which included a lot of people from production, producers. Tom Hanks would come to them. And so we would have reunions up until 2020. I think they kind of slowed down due to the
Because of
sort of
COVID.
environment in the world. Yeah. And then we've been sort of seeing each other at reunions. Like you know, the museums and stuff like that, or Normandy, and so but yeah, we would get together at least once a year, all the actors in Los Angeles,
Right, someone
and
told me that
it was great.
Michael Kudlis used to have a barbecue every so often and invite everyone over, things like that.
Yeah, and we used to do, yeah, Michael Cudlitz's house was the sort of number one spot that we would all meet at. and just have a reunion, which was great. Not many people do that, but we just felt to keep the tradition. And then not only that, there was also reunions that we were invited to, which were the families of the vets. They would have reunions and invite us to those. So it's an experience. For me, it's never been an actor's project. It's been more of a life experience for me, this show. It's a separate entity outside of my acting career. It's this whole unique experience, I guess would be the best word, that has just been giving and giving and giving, in the sense of like I've made so many friends, I've met so many people, fans of the show who have become friends. The bond that these men created, I believe it's 84 years ago now, in Toccoa, Georgia, the bond that these men created in Toccoa, Georgia, has surpassed time and has transcended them into us, yourself, me, and different people. That bond is still existing in all of us. So it's an amazing, life-changing experience. It's very unique. I don't have any other project that, definitely there are other projects that I'm involved with that I'm very close to the cast, but Band Brothers is, what do they say? The not the genie in a bottle, but what is it? It's similar to that. Lightning in a bottle.
Lightning in a bottle.
That's what Band Brothers is. It's very unique, and everyone involved feels it, knows it, from the production to the cast to even people who just watch the show. Fans of the show are now friends and have created bonds because of the show. So it's definitely, thanks to them, thanks to the men of Easy Company. They're still living through us,
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I get
and
that. That's great.
that makes me happy.
Are you still in touch with Tony's family at all?
Yeah, his son and his niece, a few of them, not as much. I think that in the last 6 years, the environment in the world has changed a little, and we've all kind of scattered in different directions. But we still stay in touch for sure. And I stayed in touch with them because, like I said, 2 years ago, I went and trained in Toccoa, Georgia to jump, to be able to parachute. And that was a lot of anxiety. And then I went to Normandy that same year, and I got to jump out of the C-47 on Normandy. And Greg, Tony's son, he had told me that on D-Day, because I didn't know this was another bit of information I did not know, that Tony was actually in England on D-Day. And I think that he wanted to be, I think a lot of the men wanted to be on those planes on D-Day. They just wanted to be with these other men, and so I felt like jumping in Normandy was kind of an homage to him, or giving him that, which he's jumped himself later in life. He was
I think I read
still
that.
jumping in.
I think I read that Tony jumped at like age 75 or something like that. Some crazy number,
He's done it. But it was nice for me to be able to do it in Toccoa and then in Normandy, kind of just for my own connection to Tony. So it was a great moment. It was a great experience, and I'm very grateful. And just recently, I was in Boston for another reunion, and again, it's these bonds with a lot of these vets and these men and women and the families that you just don't get anywhere else. It's great that this is still exists and it's still there, and there's a lot of, pride in terms of just proud of what these men did for us and the sacrifices that they made for us. It's good to know that people still give a damn.
That's right. And they gave us a legacy. There's no question about that.
Yeah,
For us
correct.
to cherish. Wow.
For sure.
That's really amazing.
Our freedom, these people do not take their freedom for granted. They know. We all know. And that's valuable. It's so valuable to be able to talk to other people and they share that same experience and they acknowledge what these men sacrificed and how our freedom that we have today, being in, sitting there or riding a motorcycle through Boston, like that's all thanks to them, because we probably wouldn't have, who knows what the world would look like if things were different. But I'm glad that they did what they did and, gave us our freedom, helped us keep our freedom. So,
For sure. All right, anything else you want to add? Anything else? Or do you think you've said everything that you wanted to for now?
I think so. I mean, we could talk for hours
Yeah,
about all of
I'm
it,
sure we
but
could,
if there's
for sure.
any specific things that you need to know.
No, I think you've given me so much. It's been great.
Great.
So yeah, thank you.
And thanks again for your patience and stuff.
Understand.
It is an honor to talk about Private Tony Garcia for me, always. It's and they say that you die two deaths, when you die and then when people stop speaking your name. So as long as I keep speaking his name, he's alive and well, and all, so
I think that's really important.
that's, yeah, for sure. So yeah, anytime I can talk about Tony, I'm very happy to do so. So thank you for asking.
All right. And thank you for responding. Many of your staff did not respond, but that's fine. That's okay. I'm glad that I was able to have this discussion with you. It's been very, very interesting for me also to learn more about Tony and also other aspects of the production and the history that I didn't even know before, based on, even after. I mean, right now this is episode 136, and there's still new things coming, so that's great. So I
Yeah.
do appreciate it.
Yeah, Tony was a good man. Like, just from my perspective, I knew him for 5 years and I was just a great guy. And I was very fortunate to know him and to be there on his last days. I went up to see him and I got to see him. And it was great. It was great to just know him. It's been an honor to know him. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being willing to talk about it. Sometimes, things that are personal and emotional are not the easiest things to talk about. So I do appreciate that also.
For sure, man.